We present The Unbelievable Truth, the panel game built on truth and lies. In the chair, please welcome David Mitchell.
Hello and welcome to The Unbelievable Truth, the panel show about incredible truths and barely credible lies. I'm David Mitchell. Now, if I could have picked the perfect four comedians to join me tonight, I would have been delighted. But what's done is done. So please welcome Angela Barnes, Glenn Moore, Shaprak Khorsandi and Neil Delamere. The rules are as follows. Each panellist will present a short lecture that should be entirely false, save for five hidden truths which their opponent should try to identify. Points are scored by truths that go unnoticed, while other panellists can win points if they spot a truth or lose points if they mistake a lie for a truth. First up is Angela Barnes. Angela, your subject is legs, the limbs on which a person or animal walks and stands. Off you go, Angela. Fingers on buzzers, the rest of you.
Human beings first evolved legs, not, as is commonly believed, for locomotion, but as a means of preventing genitals dragging on the ground, thus impacting a species' ability to procreate successfully. If you stand and look at an object, it will look bigger than if you lie down and look at it between your legs. That's because objects viewed from between the legs look smaller. At least, that's what my husband's told me.
Neil.
Me and your husband agree with each other.
And you and my husband are both lying to yourselves.
Well, no, it's true. Apparently. According to a 2005 Japanese scientific study entitled Perceived Size and Perceived Distance of Targets Viewed from Between the Legs, if we move our heads to view objects from between our legs, this, quote, lowers the degree of size constancy and compresses the scale for distance, meaning that objects appear smaller and it's harder for us to accurately guess their distance and scale.
That just makes me want to try that, but that's so inappropriate right now.
I hate to interrupt this, but have I gotten a point?
Yes, I said it was true.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, it's very rare for anyone to care, so... Thank you. Yes.
In the 1800s, if you needed a leg amputated, you might have been unlucky enough to have it done by surgeon Sir Robert Liston, who once brought a butter knife instead of his surgeon's knife to an operation, but continued regardless. He once accidentally removed a patient's testicles instead of the leg he was supposed to be amputating, and once, during a leg amputation, accidentally sliced off his assistant's ear.
Neil.
I'd imagine he sliced off the testicle because if he was looking at it between his legs, it would have appeared... one of those things is true.
Yes.
I'm going to go testicle.
You lost confidence halfway through. Testicle. But you're nevertheless right. Yes. He was known as the fastest knife in the West End.
I could be the fastest surgeon in the world if it didn't matter what I was lopping off.
Because Liston was able to amputate a leg in 2.5 minutes, he had a mortality rate of 10%, which in those days was considered miraculous. His speed often came at the expense of precision, and he's said to have performed the only operation to have resulted in a 300% mortality rate. During that fateful surgery, he severed his assistant's finger and accidentally cut the coat of a spectator as well. The spectator, terrified that the knife struck a vital organ, died of shock on the scene. The assistant and the patient both died later of sepsis.
Was he Jack the Ripper?
But he just did it in plain sight. Here I am, got an audience, I'm waving a knife around, everyone's dying. I get what I need as a serial killer, and it's all legal.
Human legs have a muscle called a spirosultus that is shaped like a spring and enables us to jump.
Glenn.
Oh, at the risk of sounding really stupid, I think the spring muscle thing's true.
The spirosultus?
Yes.
Shaped like a spring and enables us to jump?
Oh, now you say it like that. In the disapproving voice of David Mitchell, everything sounds really done for me.
That was my neutral voice. No, that there's no such muscle.
Okay.
No. I mean, you think about it and you do know that. Yeah.
A study conducted at Henley-on-Thames Regatta showed that a rower uses more energy in their arms when rowing than in their legs. However, this was later disputed when they conducted the experiment at Henley-on-Todd Regatta in Australia, where the river ran dry, so the crews poked their legs through holes in the boats and ran along the riverbed. Snakes used to be known in Britain as drunk lizards because they are like lizards but legless. However, it's been discovered that pythons do actually have leg bones, something John Cleese has dismissed as being a load of nonsense from the Woke Brigade. And when Peter Benchley couldn't think of a title for his novel Jaws, his father suggested calling it What's That Noshing on My Leg?
Neil.
I'm going to say pythons have something resembling leg bones.
They do.
Yes. Well done. You were hesitant because they so obviously don't have legs. I mean, that's the point of them, isn't it?
Yeah.
Both pythons and boa constrictors have tiny hind leg bones under their skin. These vestigial legs suggest that snakes are descended from lizards.
90% of us are born with two legs, but the person with the most legs was Liverpudlian Victoria Levinson, born in 1862 with 12 legs, though one was removed almost immediately because of infection. She grew up to be one of the first bingo callers, and her nickname lives on to this day. Legs 11.
Glenn.
I think she had the most amount of legs, but I don't think it was that many.
Oh, that's interesting.
Ooh.
I mean, none of it's true. But there was no such person and no such number of legs. Okay. So, I mean, there is such a number of legs, but usually you need six people to acquire it.
Yes. Or one river dance, as it's known in Ireland.
Thank you, Angela. And at the end of that round, Angela, you've managed to smuggle two truths past the rest of the panel, which are that at the Henley-on-Todd Regatta in Australia, the crews poke their legs through holes in the boats and run along the riverbed. The Todd River in Australia is actually just a dry riverbed. The event markets itself as, quote, the most fun you can have without water at a boating regatta.
It's funny, isn't it, that since 1962, they've had the same winner every year, a Mr. F. Flintstone,
I believe. And the second truth is that when Peter Benchley couldn't think of a title for his novel, Jaws, his father suggested calling it What's That Noshing on My Leg? Which means, Angela, you've scored 2 points.
Thank you. Yeah.
19th century surgeon Robert Liston was known as the fastest knife in the West End, although during one speedy leg amputation, he did accidentally remove a patient's testicles. A shocking error, but after the operation, the patient spoke very highly of him. We turn now to Glenn Moore. Glenn is a comedian who has been described as quintessentially British. How lovely. A broke, angry racist. Glenn, your subject is restaurants, places where meals are prepared and served to paying customers. Off you go, Glenn.
If you're planning on going to a restaurant, there's a few handy tips you're going to need. For example, you're more likely to order dessert in a restaurant if your waiter is overweight, and you're more likely to say, just the bill, please, actually, if they're naked from the waist down. Also, if you're feeling thrifty, if you stand in front of Domino's Pizza wearing a motorcycle helmet, you get handed so much free food.
Angela.
I think you're more likely to order dessert if your waiter's overweight.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yes. A 2015 study found that diners ordered significantly more items when served by heavy waiting staff with high body mass indexes compared with waiting staff with low body mass indexes. And their alcohol orders increased by 17.65%.
McDonald's restaurants in some European countries serve alcohol because otherwise parents would be less willing to take their kids to them. And as the father of a toddler, let me tell you, he is a nightmare if he hasn't had his McSauvignon.
Neil.
I'd say there are certain countries in Europe that serve booze in McDonald's.
You're absolutely right about that. Alcohol is available to purchase at McDonald's in several European countries, including France, Germany, Greece, Italy, Spain, and Portugal. When asked why McDonald's doesn't serve alcohol in the UK, a spokesperson said, "It's not something that fits with the family-friendly focus of our restaurant in the UK." So that's why. It's not because if they served alcohol in the UK, people would get pissed in all of the branches of McDonald's and they would become no-go areas where people are throwing low-quality meat at each other and being sick. It's not because, unlike France, Germany, Greece, Italy, Spain and Portugal, we cannot drink responsibly. We can not drink and then we can get wasted and there is nothing in between.
I don't know why that makes me feel so proud. I could cry.
Burger King, meanwhile, is home of the extra-large bacon triple cheeseburger, which was invented during a game of cards in 1762 when the Earl of extra-large bacon triple cheeseburger asked for his extra-large bacon triple cheeseburger patties placed between two slices of bread. Pizza Hut has introduced a bi-weekly buffet called the Carby Derby.
Angela.
I think the Carby Derby's a thing.
No.
No, well, it should be. Someone write that down.
I did.
Glenn.
And a restaurant in Connecticut gives diners a free book with their meal. The so-called book contains a list of dishes that the chef is willing to prepare in exchange for money. Meanwhile, the concept behind the Manhattan restaurant called Twins was to have it staffed entirely by identical twins. It was closed in 2000 after too many incidents where customers asked, "Can I speak to the managers, please?"
Angela.
I think there's a restaurant called Twins that's staffed by twins.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. There is. Yeah. Twins Restaurant in the Upper East Side was opened from 1994 to 2000 and employed a staff consisting of 29 sets of identical twins. Twin employees had to work at the same time and wear identical outfits and weren't allowed to be seen alone. If one twin was sick, the other had to take the day off.
Must be really bleak if you say to your manager, "I've got some bad news, my brother's died." You're fired. You should be warned to expect the unexpected in a restaurant lobby. Diners at the Hitler's Cross restaurant in Mumbai were greeted by a huge picture of the Nazi leader as they arrived. If you do go, you must try the special fried Reich.
Angela.
Is there a restaurant called Hitler's Cross?
You're right. Yeah.
You're the person to ask it. Yeah. Is that apostrophe possessive or is it Hitler is cross or it's Hitler's cross?
I think it's possessive.
Yeah.
Mm. I don't think they're saying that Hitler's angry.
It could be like football, a great cross into the box. He was tremendous on the right wing.
Right. Yeah.
It would be so.
In 2006, a restaurant opened in Mumbai called Hitler's Cross, which featured a swastika in the logo and a giant poster of Hitler in the entrance. Explaining the choice of name, the owner said, "Hitler is a catchy name. Everyone knows Hitler." Despite complaints from the American, Israeli and German consulates, the restaurant initially refused to change their name, but they later bowed to pressure and issued an apology.
It's called Mussolini's Angry Now. Yeah.
Thank you, Glenn. And at the end of that round, Glenn, you've managed to smuggle one truth past the rest of the panel, which is that a restaurant in Connecticut gives diners a free book with their meal. The Traveller Restaurant in Union, Connecticut, gives away an estimated 1,000 to 2,000 books each week, with customers invited to take home any book from the restaurant's impressive collection with each purchase. But that means, Glenn, you've scored 1 point. Next up is Shaparak Korsandi. Shappy, your subject is travel. In this case, journeys to countries or places for the purpose of recreation, relaxation or pleasure. Off you go, Shappy.
According to a 2017 poll for Travel UK website, the top three distressing incidents on holiday are having your passport stolen by monkeys, catching an STD when a camel spits in your mouth, and finding out that your new partner is one of those people who applauds when the plane lands. Culture vultures can visit the museum of books you claim to have read. In Texas, there's a museum of everything, which has no exhibits, just a gift shop selling gifts from famous museums from around the world. And Zagreb is home to the Museum of Broken Relationships, which displays everyday objects donated by those who have been through a breakup.
Neil.
I'd love the idea that Zagreb in Croatia is home to a museum of broken relationships. I suggest it would be better in Split. And frankly, do not care whether it's true or not.
It is true.
Oh, well,
yes. The Museum of Broken Relationships in Zagreb, Croatia, is a collection of objects left over from former lovers, accompanied by stories of the failed relationships.
I've got a fun item to donate to that, because I think I'm the only person who sold two wedding dresses in the same year, because I bought one and then I got fat, and then I bought a bigger one, and then we broke up, and then I sold the bigger one thinking we'd get back together, and then we didn't, and then I sold the little one. Anyway, my point is that...
That could be a whole suite of rooms.
Yeah. Aren't all our homes just museums of broken relationships? Do you nick your ex's things and never give them... OK, so...
That is basically a Taylor Swift album that you've just done there.
Meanwhile, in 2019, the Cornish Tourist Board demanded that weather forecasters stopped standing in front of Cornwall. Memories in Cornwall are still scarred from the loss of three deep-sea trawlers during the Great Storm of 1987 due to Michael Fisher's butt blocking out St Ives.
Glenn.
I think weather presenters were asked to stop standing in front of Cornwall.
Correct. Yes, in 2019, the Cornish Tourist Board complained to the Met Office and the BBC, stating that forecasters were, quote, standing directly in front of Western Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly. At a meeting with the BBC, it was agreed that in future, forecasters would, quote, work harder to avoid blocking the region. And since then, the Cornish Tourist Board have conceded that, quote, they do seem to have shuffled back a bit. So there's a happy ending there. Yeah.
Each year, millions of people fail to properly check their travel documents and end up sorely disappointed. In 2004, a couple from Yorkshire booked a holiday in Tenerife only to find themselves in Tel Aviv.
Neil.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to say that's true.
You're absolutely right. Yes, it is. In 2004, pub landlady Diane Bell and her partner Mick booked a trip from Thailand to Tenerife through a travel agency. I think they'd gone to Thailand from Britain and then they didn't like it and they decided to go to Tenerife. Bell explained that when the plane tickets for Tel Aviv arrived, I said to Mick that it didn't say Tenerife on the ticket. It said something else. He said it was probably the way they spelled Tenerife. According to Bell, when they landed in Tel Aviv after a 12-hour flight, they were immediately arrested on suspicion of terrorism, strip-searched and locked up overnight before they were allowed to leave the following morning. They recovered by flying straight to a resort in Thailand for a week.
I love that they must have been like, we think you're a terrorist. And he's like, no, that's just how they pronounce Tenerife.
In Austria, US citizens who get into difficulty on holiday are encouraged to visit McDonald's, as in all 194 branches, they have a 24-hour hotline to the American embassy. To get help, they have to say the phrase, I'm not loving it. Keen traveller Queen Victoria so loved Scotland that she put on a Scottish accent when she travelled north of the border. The second they passed Carlisle, she'd turn to her lady-in-waiting and say, we're not amused, pal, a phrase still known at the Edinburgh Festival in Scotland, especially during any student improv group show.
Angela.
I think Queen Victoria put on a Scottish accent in Scotland.
You're absolutely right, she did. Queen Victoria loved Balmoral Castle so much that when she visited, she was known to pretend to be Scottish. According to the historian Miranda Carter, as soon as Victoria arrived in Scotland, her voice would take on a peculiar approximation of a Scottish accent, and she'd talk about handing over woon pooned to some deserving crofter. And that's the end of Shappy's lecture. At the end of that round, Shappy, you've managed to smuggle one truth past the rest of the panel, which is that in Austria, US citizens who get into difficulty on holiday are encouraged to visit McDonald's, as all 194 branches have a 24-hour hotline to the American embassy, and employees are required to help any American needing urgent assistance.
What's wrong? They've run out of wine.
And that means, Shappy, you've scored 1 point. It's now the turn of Neil Delamere. Your subject, Neil, is tigers, large, solitary, carnivorous felines which have thick fur that's tawny-coloured with black stripes. Off you go, Neil.
5% of the world's tigers have epilepsy. Berlin Zoo's tiger has epilepsy, and if she escapes, they don't shoot her. They turn on and off the lights really quickly and let nature take its course. Jane Eyre author Charlotte Bronte had a pet tiger, who she adored.
Angela.
I think Charlotte Bronte had a pet tiger.
I think she wrote Jane Eyre.
Oh, she did do that.
Well, It's interesting, Angela, that you should...
I've just realised that that's how ridiculous that is, as I've said. It's funny, isn't it? Because you hear something, think, oh, that sounds true. Then you say it out loud again and go, well, of course she did.
It's interesting, because that is actually a truth.
Oh, really?
But it was... See, what Neil's been very clever here, and you can't see the punctuation, but what Neil wrote was, Jane Eyre author Charlotte Bronte had a pet, comma, tiger, comma, who she adored. And the thing is, the pet's name was Tiger, and he thought that it would be a clever way of concealing a quite plausible truth as something that no one would ever buzz in on. No. And you've
didn't
outsmarted
count on me,
him
did he?
By believing something impossible.
I knew one day that would work in my favour.
You're absolutely right. It just wouldn't have been practical for Charlotte Bronte to have an actual tiger, if you think about how life was in the part of Yorkshire she lived in the 19th century. It just really wouldn't have been safe.
She'd have written Jane. Ah!
Exactly. Assuming the tiger attacked halfway through her writing the title. In fact, she had a pet cat whose name was Tiger. Ginger and white tabby cat that she adored.
I'm so sorry, there's a bit of a delayed reaction, but I think that 5% of tigers do have epilepsy.
Oh, I was just about to buzz in on that as well.
Well, I mean, you took your time. Is that all the two of you have been thinking about? Well, it's not true.
Oh.
5%?
I wasn't going to buzz in, actually.
But Dublin Zoo does have a female tiger with epilepsy who's called Tundra, and I believe who Neil has met.
I have, yeah. I was a guest zookeeper for a day on a TV show and they said, do you want to hold the tiger's tail while they withdraw blood? And I said, absolutely. And she stands there and she puts her tail out and they feed her and she's entirely distracted so they don't have to sedate her. But I'll never forget, I said, will she not attack me? And the zookeeper said, no, I'll feed her at the other end. And you would not believe how food orientated a tiger is. Yes. I was like, no, I would absolutely believe that.
Yeah, that's... very much what I'm worried about.
Yeah. The best bit was, I said, what are we going to do? And they said, we're going to go back around the zoo enclosure with a net. I was like, she's not a bloody butterfly. This is insane. And she went, no, Annette is our most experienced zookeeper. If a male jaguar mates with a female tiger, the offspring will be called a jagger. The animal's a gorge feeder, meaning however much it eats, a jagger just can't get no satisfaction. You can't groan and clap at the same time. Choose one or the other.
Such a mixed response, wasn't it? Yeah.
The naming of the tiger hybrids depends on the sexes. When a male mates with a lion, it's a liger, but when a male mates with a cougar, he's the French president.
Angela.
It's definitely a liger. A liger's a thing.
A liger is a thing, but it's
but,
not...
Oh, is it the other way round?
Yes, it's the other way round.
Oh, you sneaky bugger.
Yeah, when
he
a male...
He so wants to win Angela, let him have it.
When a male tiger mates with a lion, it's called a tigon, not a liger. But I think when a male lion mates with a female tiger, then that might be a liger, I think.
London's Tiger Tiger nightclub was fined after one of its bartenders mistakenly gave customers sodium hydroxide powder to lick off their hand with their tequila shots. The bartender denied the error, saying he would never make such an obvious mistake and the police should take the victim's stories with a pinch of caustic soda.
I've been to a Tiger Tiger. That almost certainly has happened.
It did happen, yes. In December 2021, a bartender at Tiger Tiger in London's Haymarket gave a group of customers caustic soda to accompany their tequila shots. Finding there was no salt, he had gone to an unlit area behind the bar and used a disposable plastic cup to scoop what he believed was salt from a large white container on a shelf. The customers then poured the white substance onto the back of their hands, licked it and drank the shot. The group were hospitalised and the nightclub was fined £120,000 by Westminster City Council.
In ancient times, a subtle means of taking revenge against your enemies was to place finely chopped tiger whiskers in their food. The numerous whisker barbs would get caught in the victim's digestive tract, causing hundreds of painful sores and infections. Oddly, any such adulterated food was harmless to house cats. In most cases, the domestic felon would actually choose that food over other options. According to some surveys, 8 out of 10 cats... preferred. You know the rest.
Glenn.
I think the finely chopped tiger's whiskers thing might be true.
It is true, yes. Yes, putting finely chopped tiger's whiskers in people's food is a method of revenge believed to have been employed in India in the time of the Maharajas and in 16th and 17th century China. Tiger whiskers are covered in tiny barbs which, if ingested, hook onto the lining of the digestive tract, and the idea is that as the victim eats more, the whiskers will tear the intestinal lining, leading to gastric perforation and a slow and agonising death.
Full of lols, this one, isn't it?
Yeah, you're listening to Radio 4.
Saber-toothed tigers never existed, and no one has ever seen one. They're entirely imaginary, like a dragon or a GP.
Angela.
Are saber-toothed tigers... Oh, God, I've done it again. Are they fictional?
No.
No.
Well, that is true, that assertion that you buzzed in on.
Right.
The saber-toothed tigers never existed. Right. The animal commonly referred to as a saber-toothed tiger, which is an extinct animal, but not right. a non-existent animal, was not a tiger or even closely related to one, but rather another kind of cat which more closely resembled a lion. These saber-toothed cats, or smilodons, were short but heavily built, with bobtails and sharp canine teeth, and lived throughout the Americas from about 2.5 million years ago until their extinction 10,000 years ago. So prehistoric humans would have seen smilodons. They've been referred to as saber-toothed tigers, but they aren't tigers at all. They are saber-toothed felines.
Sorry, I stopped listening quite a while ago. Do I get a point?
you do get a point.
Great.
Yes, thank you. And that's the end of Neil's lecture. And at the end of that round, Neil, you've managed to smuggle one truth past the rest of the panel, which is that if a male jaguar mates with a female tiger, the offspring would be called a jagger, while the offspring of a female jaguar and a male tiger would be called a tiguar. And that means, Neil, you've scored 1 point. Which brings us to the final scores. In fourth place, with minus 1 point, we have Shaparak Korsandi. In third place with no points, it's Glenn Moore. In second place with 6 points, it's Angela Barnes. And in first place with an unassailable 7 points, it's this week's winner, Neil Delamere. That's about it for this week. Goodbye.
The Unbelievable Truth was devised by John Naismith and Graham Garden and featured David Mitchell in the chair with panellists Glenn Moore, Angela Barnes, Neil Delamere and Shaparak Korsandi. The chairman's script was written by Dan Gaster and Colin Swash, and the producer was John Naismith. It was a random production for BBC Radio 4.